I've always really liked to learn, but school brought on a lot of stress, and I just felt like I was kind of failing as a student.
She was so excited to learn when she was little, and I've been just seeing it plummet.
Our kids just come home grumpy, overworked, and craziest amount of busy homework.
School's like something that I always dread going to because you're going to be stuck in a classroom sitting there for hours and hours.
There was no time to clean their rooms. I couldn't ask them to help me unload the dishwasher or vacuum a room. They were too busy. They literally were always doing schoolwork.
My world revolved around school, and that was all that there was.
It really made me start to think and question what we were doing, and made me wonder about what other alternatives there were. I just thought, I don't think we buy into this anymore.
Finally, I hit my breaking point. I was like, I don't want to go to school anymore.
Many parents do not realize that they have options, and they don't even feel like they have a right to have much of a say in their children's education.
The very first thing you need to do is think outside the box of the school. Think outside the conventional notions of what learning is.
Times are changing. Schools are not. And parents want to know, well, what can I give my child? If the salvation of school is really just an empty promise, you know, what is it? And then they realize, me, my family, my community.
The idea that kids are this entire human being and are interacting with the world, not just a teacher in a classroom, is still new to so many adults.
The best way to have an impact in the direction of the education revolution is to go outside the system.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the show. Today is December 5th. Merry Christmas. I'm very excited to be welcoming to the show for the first time somebody that I've been meaning to talk to for a while, filmmaker Jeremy Stewart. 3 years ago, Jeremy released a documentary called Class Dismissed, a film about learning outside of the classroom. We're going to talk about that film in great detail today, as well as a kind of follow-up project due out in 2019 called Self-Taught. It's not a follow-up as far as the same people are concerned. There's some overlapping interviewees in the film. But Self-Taught is a film about unschooling outcomes. How do unschoolers fare as adults? You know, that's a question a lot of people are asking. So Jeremy is going to tackle that in his next documentary. So we talk about his long career in filmmaking, spans 3 decades. But his questions about what his own daughter's education would look like led him down a path to making this film. We're going to talk about that in the show today as well. So that's it. I hope your December is going well. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and take care. It's great to finally have you on the show. I've known about your work for years. You directed a film that came out in 2015 called Class Dismissed. This was your directorial debut, right?
That's correct. Yes, it was the first film that I, you know, produced and directed myself from, you know, concept to finished product. But I'm not new to the film industry. I've been involved in the film industry for about 30 years, but primarily as an editor.
The film is about unschooling or transitioning away from school, and the through line is a family in Los Angeles that takes their children out of school, and it's kind of intercut with lots of interviews with people who my audience would be familiar with, like Lori Couture, who I went to high school with.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. Wow. I went to high school with her. And I think she's only ever been on the show once, but Pat Ferenga, Blake Bowles, Sandra Dodd have all been guests on the podcast, I think all over the course of the last year. And, you know, it mentions the work of John Taylor Gatto. So lots of overlap in Class Dismissed with what we do at School Sucks. So we'll get into that in a little more detail soon. But I was looking at your IMDb, and yeah, you've been at it for a while. So you edited the Blind Melon video, No Rain.
I did, yes.
That's very cool. I remember seeing that on MTV when I was just a kid. That's awesome. And the Criss Cross video, which one was it? Warm It Up.
Uh-huh. Well, I actually did a couple for them, but that was the first one, yeah.
So you had this long career working as an editor. What was happening in your life that made you want to pursue this project that you're very much, you know, an auteur in this case, directing, producing, bringing all these elements together for Class Dismissed? So what, I guess, got you passionate about the topic of unschooling, or what raised your awareness about the problems with school as it existed and as it was being accepted in the country?
Right, right. Yeah, good question. So, you know, I mean, I grew up in England, in London, and, you know, my own personal experience with school, at least through middle school, was kind of okay. You know, I did all right. I just sort of followed the rules, did what they told me to do. And then when I got to high school, everything changed. You know, in high school, it really sucked, basically.
Sure.
You know, they had this crazy thing where they brought you into a career counselor meeting and said, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, you know, I'm 14 and I'm like, well, I want to be a rock and roll star. You know, I mean, I was a professional musician. I was a drummer. And I obviously wasn't professional at that time, but that's what I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I want to be a rock star. And they said, well, that's not a job. You have to pick a job from this list here. And they handed me a list of these jobs, you know, accountant, you know, doctor, lawyer, you know, all the usual things. And I said, well, my job's not on there. You know, I want to be a drummer in a rock band. And they said, well, no, that's not a job. You have to pick. I'm like, no, you don't understand. That's what I want to be. Anyway, so clearly this wasn't working at this point.
Right. Don't they have some kind of like competence test or aptitude test in England that they use to like fit you into a career?
Yeah, I mean, they do. They definitely try to funnel you into you know, a particular path. And I wasn't having that at all. I wanted to forge my own path.
Right.
So very quickly, my enthusiasm for school went south. And my high school years, I basically did the minimum amount I could do to get through, spent as much time as I possibly could playing music and practicing my drumming, and was basically screw you, you know. So I kind of failed high school miserably and left, feeling very, put out by the whole system and very discouraged by the whole experience. And I guess that little seed, of discontent, you know, settled in me somewhere. And then many years later, when my daughter was born, my wife and I were talking about what we were going to do for schooling. You know, this was something we hadn't obviously talked about yet. And she actually introduced me to the idea of homeschooling through a John Holt book, How Children Fail. Mm. You know, and I read that book and it was like a light bulb going off. It just, you know, resonated with me. I was like, oh, yes. And then, you know, that little seed of discontent that I'd had in my own schooling suddenly bloomed. And I was like, oh yeah, definitely. This, you know, there's no way she's going to go to school. If it's anything like my experience was, then forget it.
Right.
So, you know, that sort of started us on our path. And then we started gathering information and trying to figure out, well, what does this look like? You know, I didn't know anything about homeschooling or unschooling at all. And so we went to our local state conference, the California Homeschool Organization conference. And there were, you know, hundreds of families from all walks of life, all homeschooling or unschooling in different ways. And we spent the weekend there and I was so blown away by the kids that I met. Just there was something different about them. You know, it was palpable. They'd come right up to me and talk to me, you know, look me in the eye. It was like something's going on with these kids. Like, wow, this is, I mean, teenagers would just have a conversation with me. And like, you know, when I was a teenager, I wouldn't have a conversation with adults, you know?
No, absolutely. No, I really, yeah. I observed this just over the course of the last year. I was traveling across the country and I visited a couple alternative schools and a lot of unschooling environments around the country. And it was one of the first things I noticed. I was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at a place called the Circle School. Mm-hmm. And teenagers came right up when me and my friend Tony came into the building. We were adults, but we were new, potentially interesting people worth talking to. And I just contrasted that against the experience that I had as a teacher, as a tutor. So many times going into a teenager's house for the first time to tutor them for the SAT or to help them get their grades up and encountering that resistance because I was this archetype of educational adult. You know?
The authority figure.
Right, right. But yes, go on.
Yeah, so anyway, so that weekend was really, you know, life-changing because I was, you know, where we both were, my wife and I were both bowled away by, you know, bowled over by the reaction of these kids. And we're like, wow, well, if this is, you know, if this is a result of homeschooling, then sign us up, you know, definitely. So, and our daughter was about two or three at that time. So that's how we began. And then for us, we looked at different options of, well, how do you go about doing this? And for us, unschooling really just seemed to be the right fit. You know, we're not, I think neither of us are sort of prone to following instructions too well.
Sure. Yeah.
we're both very independent. And so the whole idea of the sort of unschooling or sort of easygoing kind of approach felt much better than any kind of formalized curriculum or anything like that. So we never did any really sort of prepackaged curriculum type things. We just basically learned from life together as a family. And we were already kind of doing that the way we were living, and it seemed like, well, nothing should change just because, quote unquote, our daughter's reaching school age now. We're just going to keep living and learning together. And that's kind of what we've done ever since.
And how old is she now?
She's now 14.
All right.
And so to come back to the other part of your question, the impetus for this project began because, you know, several years into it, into our own experience, I was talking with a friend, and as a matter of fact, at the same conference a few years later, and we were like, you know, how come there are no movies out there about unschooling or homeschooling? Like, you know, I was doing some research, and I couldn't find anything out there. You know, there were some videos online, YouTube videos, and smaller things that people had done and shared some of their experiences, but there was no feature-length documentary-type project. And as a filmmaker, I thought, wow, this is perfect. I would really love to be the person to make that film. And so that's kind of how the project began, and it took 4.5 years, and then, you know, Class Dismissed was born and launched the whole, the whole film and my involvement with the unschooling world in a big way. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I have to be honest, like when I first saw it, when I first heard about it, I was like, oh no, somebody beat me to it. This whole thing that I started, I mean, I was really happy that it was out and that it got the exposure that it did and continues to get. But I formulated the whole School Sucks thing as a documentary film.
Really?
And yeah. I think I pitched it to the wrong people and was too sensitive to criticism because I was coming at it. I was, you know, taking a pretty radical approach. The acceptable thing is that, schools are underfunded, and if you give schools more money, that will fix a lot of these problems. And that misses so many components. So much of what you covered in the film would be missed by summing up the problem that way. So, right. Discouraged, it got shelved, and years later, it just took the form of this podcast. So I think I had been doing the show five or six years when I first saw the film. Yeah, so part of it was, oh, somebody got there first. But it was also great that, you know, unschooling got the exposure on that level. So you're talking so far about lots of organic experiences that you have face-to-face with people who are already doing this. Was there anyone as far as authors or influencers besides John Holt?
Well, obviously, you know, John Taylor Gatto as well. I read a lot of, you know, a lot of books, different books and articles online as I was researching for the film, you know, trying to cover a lot of different bases because, you know, one thing I didn't want to do with Class Dismissed was focus too much on one particular approach. You know, I wanted to be as inclusive as possible because I really believe that if you want to educate your kids outside of the traditional school system, then there really is no one particular way to do it. You should do whatever works for your family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whether that's following curriculum and it works for you, then great. You know, if you want to unschool, that's great. Radical unschool, great. You know, classical curriculum, it's all good. You know, I don't think any of it's necessarily bad. I think that the point is that you now have, you're empowered to actually make those choices for yourself and for your children, or they're empowered as well. And, you should just follow whatever works for you and change it, you know, be willing to change it when it doesn't work. And so in the course of making that film, I did a lot of research, read a lot of stuff online. You know, I can't say there was one particular thing that influenced me. I mean, I tried to just get as much into one film as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I did receive some criticism that there wasn't enough diversity in there. There wasn't enough, you know, we didn't talk enough about classical curriculum or other methods, you know, but you can only get so much in a 90-minute film.
Right.
And, you know, as you know, the film primarily focuses on this one particular family in Los Angeles and their journey. You know, and to me, that was always going to be the focus of the film anyway. You know, the idea was what would it be like to follow someone's journey from school to homeschooling or unschooling or whatever, you know, whatever path they choose? How could you document that in a very real way and make it relatable to people who might also be considering doing the same thing?
Well, let's talk a little bit about that family. They're in Los Angeles, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. How did you find them? How did you get them to, I mean, maybe it wasn't that much of a push, but how did you get them to agree to that level of exposure? Or were they, you know, totally willing right from the start?
Well, surprisingly, you know, I didn't know how that was going to go. I'd already started the film. I'd interviewed Sandra Dodd and a few other people and sort of had some, you know, basic interviews down. And then it was like, okay, I need to find a family. And how am I going to do that? And so my co-producer and I, we put out a call on some Facebook pages to, you know, unschooling and homeschooling groups looking for families. And we specifically wanted someone who had kids who were in school, preferably kind of middle school age, so that they could, you know, be reasonably coherent on camera. You know, we didn't want two little kids, really.
right.
And, you know, because it's just hard, you know. And so we had very specific criteria that we were kind of looking for. And I thought, well, this is going to be impossible. You know, we're never going to find anyone. Anyway, we put this call out. And we had about 150 families respond.
Oh, wow.
From literally all over the country. I mean, everywhere. It was, you know, Hawaii, Alaska, all over, everywhere. It was like, wow, this is crazy. And then we had a form that they filled out to ask some basic questions about their school experience and why they were considering homeschooling and this, that, and the other, and had they been on camera and how did they feel about that and so on. And we just read through them all and boiled it all down. And I think we narrowed it down to about five families of interest. And then as it happened, my co-producer Dustin happened to be going down to Los Angeles for a business trip. And he said, hey, do you want me to stop by that family in LA that we liked? And I said, sure. So he went by and met them and filmed a few minutes of footage with them and sent it to me so that I could see them on camera. And I was like, oh, yes, definitely. This is it. So then I called them and we chatted about it. And I went down by myself to meet them. And we spent a day together with no cameras. And I said, look, what you're doing here is really courageous, because it's pretty stressful, I would imagine, to pull your kids out of school and embark upon this journey. And not only that, we're going to be in your face.
Right. Yeah.
So I was kind of amazed that they agreed to it. And I'm incredibly grateful to them for allowing us into their lives like that. But it went very smoothly. They were pretty comfortable with it. And as you can see from the film, you know, they went through a lot of twists and turns on their journey. And I was just fortunate enough to be there for the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, and it plays really, really naturally. And it really works in the movie. I mean, this was one of the things, you know, I traveled across the country, as I was saying, and I wanted to interview all these people who were doing this. And I felt at times like, okay, well, you have to be extra cautious to not be, you know, exploitive but that really doesn't happen. And you would think, obviously, when people are being that vulnerable, that concern would be there. I'm sure it had to be throughout the process.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, and the hardest thing about documentary anyway is that you don't really know where the story's going.
Right.
You know, it's not a screenplay. You know, you haven't written the ending. We really didn't know what they were going to do. One of the criteria was that you have to be committed to pulling your kids out of school. In other words, you've already made the decision that you're going to try this.
Right.
And they said, yes, we really want to do it. And so, okay, that was great. But then in terms of how they chose to homeschool or unschool, or what, you know, which direction they would take and how long they would do it for, remained completely up in the air, you know, which made for some interesting experiences. You know, just at one point, as you know, in the film, Anna decides she wants to go back to high school.
Yeah.
And part of me was like, oh, well, there goes the movie. That was just a big waste of 3 years of my life. But, you know, I figured, well, that's part of the story. You know, let's see what happens. Well, I'm just gonna go along for the ride here. I can't control what's gonna happen. Let's see how she does. And as you know, for those people that have seen the film, and I'm spoiling it now, but you know, she decided that that wasn't for her in the end. But I didn't know that that was going to happen. So that was quite an adventure.
If you wound up, I mean, I could imagine it would have been a little bit stressful considering what you had invested as far as time and energy at that point. If you wound up filming a total failure, did you have a contingency plan? I mean, I like what you're saying because you want to tell the story as it happened and you didn't know what was going to happen. So it's not like, well, it didn't work with this family. Let's go refilm the thing with some other family as the through line that makes it look like unschooling always works. You know, I hear this story a lot. I think it's something children should be exposed to. It's certainly an option they should have. I know that a lot of kids, because, you know, high school is a very social thing, they do choose to return there at some point in their lives. I've heard lots of stories about kids who just do it for a year and they go, I don't know what I was thinking, you know? So I guess that leads to this question about the narrative or planning the narrative for the film. When you had this really, really overwhelming response of all of these families, I mean, that must have been a project in itself, like, you know, sorting through everybody and evaluating like locations and all of that. Did you always imagine as it being, you know, one family to kind of hold everything together as far as like a through line for the story? Or did you at times consider, well, what if we did, you know, multiple families, anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the original plan was I would have three families, you know, one who was going to be unschooling, one who was going to be more of a sort of curriculum school at home type approach, and one who was kind of on the fence about the whole thing. And I thought that would create a lot of interesting dynamics. But it was just totally impractical for, you know, for a lot of reasons. You know, financially it was impractical, just trying to track that much footage and, you know, everything. It was just way too big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was way too big. So, you know, it got scaled down pretty quickly once we got all the applications in and I started looking at it and, you know, looking at what resources we had available. It was like, no, we should just focus on this one family and take our chances and see what happens. And there wasn't really a backup plan. Had they chosen, you know, to go back to school and give up on unschooling, I would have had to rethink an ending and, you know, probably figure out ways to use what we had shot and just come up with the best ending that I could, you know, in other ways. So I really didn't know what was going to happen.
Well, you know, I mean, not to be a producer after the fact, but it does show kids making a choice still, right?
Yes, exactly. Which is, I mean, there was still a lot of good elements there. It's not like it would have been a complete waste because, you know, and again, I think that I'm sure there are many instances where it doesn't work out. You know, people give it a try and for some reason or another, it's just not for them. And that's okay too. You know, again, it's really at the end of the day, it's about having choice and having options, you know, and I really believed in that. And I think that for those families that just put their kids in school without ever questioning whether they have any choices, you know, that's just unfortunate because you do have choices.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes those choices work out and sometimes they don't. Most people that I've talked to who have tried homeschooling, it usually works out really well for them, at least for a good period of time. And then maybe, you know, maybe they go back to high school or something for a little bit, you know, or they go off to college or whatever. But at least they are taking the initiative and they're having, you know, control over their own lives and doing what they want to do for a while. And I think that's one of the biggest points being made in the film, I think, is that you do have a choice, that this is a totally viable option.
Right. And that being said, something that comes up in my audience a lot, there'll be a family that, you know, the parents are divorced. Mom or dad is really on board with our message at School Sucks. Their co-parent is not. And as a result, they have to accept their children being in school. And, you know, I met a lot of people in my travels who are in this situation. And one of the things I said, and I want to get your thoughts on this, you know, if you have a parent, if you're a child with a parent who is willing to invest the time and energy in trying to understand this, to embrace these ideas, that could be really helpful for that child when it comes to school survival. When parents completely outsource the responsibility of education to the school, I think that's dangerous. But when a parent shows enough interest and investment to even just explore unschooling, if it doesn't work out, that is so much better for the child.
No, I agree completely with that. I mean, definitely, because one, you know, kids learn so much from modeling, right? They see how we are as parents and how we handle different situations in our lives, and they model from that and learn from that. So, yeah, if you have a parent who's willing to, you know, step outside of that box and just give it a go and try something different, whether it works or not in the end, is great modeling, I think, that, you know, sends a good message that, yeah, you do have choices. You don't have to accept everything that's just handed to you. You know, question everything and find other routes and test it for yourself.
Right.
Because ultimately you're going to be a better person for it. Otherwise you're just a sheep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that, you know, there's lots of social pressures that are tied to that. And,
of course,
you know, when I did those, when I was a tutor, it was just one family competing against another family in a neighborhood, and, you know, lots of people willing to tell themselves stories. This is a good school district. These are the best public schools. Those guys, you hear those things all the time.
Right. I mean, and the family in my film said that too. I mean, they moved to that particular area of Los Angeles specifically for the school. Mm. It wasn't part of the LA Unified School District. It's El Segundo, which is a smaller community that has its own school district. And the school was rated, or the middle school there was rated one of the highest in the area.
Right.
And it still didn't work out for them. They were miserable. So that happens a lot. I think people, you know, sort of buy into that and then, you know, look at the ratings and go, oh, well, it must be great. You know, it says so on the website.
Right. So
but the reality could be very different.
Yeah. For the people who haven't seen Class Dismissed, what was the family's motive for exploring unschooling, and where did their willingness to give it a try come from? What were they dealing with?
Well, I think, you know, the initial impetus was Rachel, the mother in the film, was witnessing in Anna, the oldest girl, just a complete lack of desire and lack of interest to learn anything. Mm. You know, she used to be a sort of vibrant, outgoing person as a younger girl, you know, interested in learning. And for some reason at this particular juncture in her life, at this particular school, all of that sort of drained away. And so she became very concerned about that.
Right.
And then started to really question it, you know, and kudos to her for like doing research. I mean, she was already researching when we found her. She'd already started reading John Holt books and other things and looking at options because she felt like there's something not right here. You know, we've moved to this area for this supposedly great school, and Anna's miserable.
Right.
And she's not learning anything. And, you know, she's depressed, and it's not working very well. So we have to do something different. So I think that was their initial impetus. But then, as you see in the film, you know, they really didn't know where to begin. And I think that they probably fell into the path that many people who try this, at least initially try this journey, is that they think, well, we'll just replicate school at home.
Yeah.
You know, we'll just remove them from the environment. We'll just teach them at home and that'll be fine. And they tried that for a little bit and that didn't work for them. And I know for some people it does, and that's okay too. If it works, great. But for them it didn't. And so they abandoned that, and then they tried a charter school. They thought, well, maybe that was sort of a hybrid version of schooling that might work. And that didn't work either. And ultimately they ended up with more of an unschooling approach that seemed to really work very well for them and their particular family dynamics.
And also a kind of a real world education, which is something that many of the speakers in the film talk about. You know, I heard in, you know, I think it might have been Scott Noel or somebody else who's interviewed in the film said, you know, there's this myth that homeschooling happens at home. Mm-hmm. It hasn't served me well as far as SEO is concerned, but I try not to use the word homeschooling at all because it paints a picture, you know, that there's a pile of books on the kitchen table.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, for so many of these families, again, you know, you are seeing this exploring of options. What might on the surface to, especially somebody who wants to be critical of this whole idea, this just looks like failure. They tried this, it didn't work. They tried that, it didn't work.
Right.
With the assumption that school works.
Exactly, yeah.
But what it shows is, you know, the exploration of options. And I felt like that was the real success of the film, that like this is something you can really deliberate about. This is something that you can really explore and learn and experiment. That definitely comes through.
Right. And it's interesting because I think Pat Ferengi says this in the film. He says, you know, there are as many ways to homeschool as there are people doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm with you there, Brett. You know, I don't like the word homeschool because it's just such a loaded word. There's so many images that are sort of connected to that word that people have in their heads when you say that word to somebody who's not used to that world. You know, you say the word homeschool and immediately, yeah, they see those images of, oh, the books in the kitchen table and, you know, the kids don't go outside and they're sitting around, you know, cramming at home. And it's just
no
like,
friends, religious extremists.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the reality is so different to that. You know, even for those families that do follow more of an organized curriculum, you know, they're out there doing all kinds of stuff. And actually, if you ask most of them, and I've done this, I've talked to many, many people who are more curriculum based, they spend only 2 to 3 hours at most a day on any kind of curriculum. And the rest is free time to explore their passions, to be outside, to do whatever they need to do. You know, school is a large part of school is a big waste of time.
Yeah.
You know, 70% of it is spent herding the children into, you know, into the classroom and classroom management. The actual learning amount is minuscule. So if you strip away all the management and the herding of people around and the bells and the whistles and you get rid of all of that, you can learn what you need to learn in a very short period of time and then have freedom to do whatever you're really passionate about.
Well, especially if the passion is there, right? Like it might take 8 hours to cram a bunch of stuff into somebody's head every day if they have no interest. And then obviously the time that information stays there is finite, right? But if somebody's passionate about something, like 2 or 3 hours can become incredibly valuable and productive.
Huge, yeah, huge. Yeah, I mean, and I've heard all kinds of good stories about that, of people, you know, cramming in 7 years worth of math in like 2 months.
Yep, I've done it as a tutor. I don't even think it was like the girl's motivation. She was probably 13, and I think it was just like a clash of personalities with her middle school math teacher. But I was tasked as a tutor to you know, put her through like a year of pre-algebra. I think we did it in 6 weeks, and I think her only motivation was she wanted to prove to herself that she could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't even think she had a really high level of interest in math. But oh yeah, right. Absolutely. Like the school's
again,
times.
That intrinsic, you know, that when you have that intrinsic motivation, and that's the other important point here is that, you know, are you doing things because you're intrinsically motivated to do them, or are you doing them because it's extrinsic motivation? And so much of school is about extrinsic motivation. You do it to get the grade, to get the teacher's attention, you know, to be the person in the top of the class, you know, none of which has anything to do with learning.
So how did you introduce the idea of unschooling to your own daughter?
Well, we didn't really, you know, sort of introduce it as a particular thing. It's mm-hmm. just what we do.
And there was never school?
No. She's never been to school of any kind.
Right.
You know, and we just try to provide a rich environment for her to explore. You know, she takes classes that she's interested in, takes some online classes, sometimes... We've had like, people come to the house to do a little class with her, like a French class or something like that. A fluent French speaker would come and spend some time with her so she can, you know, engross herself in French. It just really varies. You know, we try to be really fluid and not fixed in our ideas of what should and shouldn't be happening, and, you know, follow her interests and introduce her to new concepts and new ideas and say, hey, what about this? This sounds interesting. Would that be something you might want to do? And she'll either say, yeah, or no, and mm-hmm. either one is fine.
So I've heard you describe it as like you see what the intrinsic motivation is, and then you just try to point them in the right direction, basically.
Exactly. And the other part of it is trying to stay out of the way as much as possible. You know, and I think that one can be challenging for a lot of parents, especially, you know, parents that like myself that sort of grew up more traditionally. You know, I had a very kind of strict father, and, you know, to question authority was something you didn't do. And, you know, I sort of grew up in a very authoritarian environment. And so it's challenging sometimes to put that aside and work more in a sort of partnership paradigm with my daughter, you know,
right.
Because I'm ingrained in that, you know, authoritarian model.
It feels natural.
Know?
Yeah.
It comes up, you know, it rears its ugly head and I feel it and I go, whoa, that's, you know, that's my dad talking. That's not me. Wait a minute. That's not how I want to be, you know? So, that's something I personally have to constantly work with, and that can be challenging. And, you know, that's the whole process of de-schooling, if you like, you know, of unraveling the notions that I unconsciously bought into in my schooling and in my upbringing, you know, and to unravel those and step outside of that and say, well, that's, you know, are they working? Not really. Well, what do I want to do differently?
Right.
And that's an ongoing process that's continuous. But that makes it exciting, too. It makes it challenging and interesting and, you know, it's vibrant and energetic. It's not dull.
Right.
And I like that, you know, because then I think everyone just feels more alive and more engaged in life.
And I know that people in the audience who do this, they like to hear, they're comforted to hear from what I've gathered about other people's challenges. So you talk about, you know, being raised in a more authoritarian environment and the parental outer voice can become the adult child's inner voice in ways right. where we catch ourselves going, oh, where's this coming from? This mm-hmm. isn't based on what I've read or based on where my passions are. These aren't my thoughts. So that's definitely one challenge that you've worked through. What are some of the others that you've encountered?
Yeah, I think the other one personally for me is, you know, I've always been a very sort of self-motivated person anyway, even when I was forced into the school system, you know, as I said earlier in the show, you know, I wanted to be a professional musician and they told me I couldn't and I did anyway.
Right.
Because it's like, well, I'm just going to put in whatever work I have to put in to make it happen. And, you know, I don't care what anyone else says. I'm just going to do it. And so I've always sort of operated from that model, I guess, or that sort of inner motivational force. And so, you know, one of the other personal challenges that I have sometimes is that, you know, my daughter might say she's interested in this particular thing and we make it happen and we get it together and it's all going well for a little bit. And then she just abandons it. Mm. And walks away, you know, and a part of me just goes, oh, no, what? No, you know, you can't walk away now. We've barely got going. Like, keep going. And I'm like, well, I have to accept that she's no longer interested, at least for now. I mean, maybe she will be later, you know. And again, if I really dig into that feeling in myself, then often what's behind it is my own expectations.
Yeah.
Of what should be happening. Well, you know, well, we paid for this course and we got these things and we got this, all these, you know, equipment or whatever it is, and we've committed to this and now you're just going to abandon it? And I'm like, well, wait, that's my expectation though.
Right.
You know? And so again, it ties back into that upbringing and, you know, the sort of messages that I have unconsciously bought into, I think from my own, you know, childhood. And that's a challenging one. I have to step back from that sometimes and realize, well, yeah, you know, if it was me, I would keep going. I wouldn't give up. But this is not me.
So is there a kind of balance there in that self-mediation where I know that a fear that a lot of people have is like, well, what if we do this and nothing productive happens, nothing valuable happens? I mean, today more than ever, there is a world of distraction, you know,
yeah.
tempting these kids with things that are not only unproductive, but I would say damaging, like behaviorist, you know, like right. B.F. Skinner, press a food pellet button and get a food pellet kind of thing with certain uh-huh. video games. Not that all video games are bad, obviously. And Peter Gray actually turned me around on this because I was kind of anti-video games based on some mm-hmm. of the things mm-hmm. that I had seen. But I was seeing how I think video games were a respite for schooled kids. Right. Like if you're right. suddenly given this opportunity to get out of school, this is what I'm going to do. Right. This is right. an escape from all of that. But I definitely believe they have an educational value. But that's just one example of temptations that exist in this world. So do you feel like when it comes to expectations that there needs to be some kind of balance or some kind of clarity on what this is all going to look like?
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I'm not really sure. I mean, if you jump into something and you commit yourself to something for a while and then you just abandon it and quote unquote nothing good comes out of it, have you wasted that time? And
right.
I would say no. Nothing is a waste, because I think every experience that we have in some way or another goes into our little toolbox, if you like, on how to be in the world and who to be and how to function. You know, and it's all valuable. Even negative experiences, you know, we learn something from them. We may not realize what that is until much later on.
Right.
But
yeah.
Is there any such thing as wasting time? I don't think so. You know, I mean, yes, at the moment, perhaps it's a waste. But later on, who knows how those influences and those experiences are going to resurface? You know, and I have to, again, you know, I think all of us can only really look at our own lives when examining this. And, you know, if I look at mine, you know, there are things that I was interested in as a kid that I kind of threw away and abandoned. And now all these years later, they're still in there. You know, they come back every now and again. I go, oh yeah, you know, that was that little thing, you know, and so in some way, those experiences are still shaping me to this day.
Mm.
Even though it wasn't something I took by the reins at the time, I just sort of, glossed over it and abandoned it and moved on. Somehow it left some residue, and that residue is informing who I am now in some way.
Sure.
So it's a tricky thing. I think, this idea of wasting time, and Peter Gray talks about this a lot too, about boredom.
Yeah.
How valuable boredom is. And you mentioned this about the fact that there's all these distractions these days. And for me, the biggest danger in all those distractions is it doesn't allow us to be bored. And I think being bored is an incredibly creative, fertile ground.
For introspection, even?
Yeah.
I try to make a habit of, going out and walking with no devices, with no earbuds in my ear. It's just me and my thoughts. I think it occurred to me, I'm not a millennial. I'm over 40. And I was waiting for somebody a couple of years ago and my phone died. And I just became incredibly sad. There was nothing, there's nothing left, because I was sitting at a table in a supermarket, waiting for somebody. And suddenly there was nothing to do. And it was very confronting.
Yes.
Because I certainly remember being young and walking in the woods and getting lost in my own imagination in some ways that even amused the neighbors. I'd run around in the yard playing baseball by myself. But there I was, in my mid-30s without this crutch of a cell phone. And I was like, wow, I've become very dependent on this thing. And since then, it was a turning point to enjoy those quiet moments more. And, I see so many kids today. I have nieces and nephews being hyper-stimulated, not just so much by what they eat, but by the entertainment they consume, by having an iPod in front of their face all the time, and not getting to know themselves or just kind of explore the world using their own imagination.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's very, very true, and so much of that has to do with, being given an opportunity to play freely. Peter Gray talks a lot about this, as the idea of free play with no agenda, no rules, just complete creative imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And, kids these days, it seems like very little time to indulge in that at all, particularly those in school, because it's also, systematized and scheduled down to every 15 minutes.
yeah.
And I think that's really sad, because I actually really crave those moments of complete silence and quote unquote boredom, where there's nothing going on, nothing to do, just sit there and just experience myself, my breath, what's going on around me. That I find those incredibly invigorating and rejuvenating, actually. But I'm not sure young people today do. They seem terrified of that silence and that quiet,
Yeah, through which we can achieve a kind of presence, right? With ourselves, with other people. Do you meditate? Are you a meditator?
Yes, I am a long time. Yeah. So I think that's part of it too, is that, I spent a long time doing that and feel very comfortable in that realm. So.
Yeah. And I think, another part of it too, maybe this is more, an academic aid, is attention span.
Right.
The more you can train your attention, the more you can be free of, external stimuli, the better you can focus. And I started to realize, when I was putting these pieces together, kind of growing out of that story I told 4 or 5 years ago, this happened to me, was that my attention span had also shrunk down to nothing. And, I think about these kids who've never known anything else, other than this world. Uh-huh. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, I know it is, isn't it?
So let me ask you that. This was you're talking about giving things up when you were young versus your daughter, showing a high level of interest in something and then moving on. When you were young, you were schooled, and she has never been. Did you feel when that happened to you? Because I definitely think I felt this way when it happened to me, and still do sometimes. Did it feel like failure?
Yes, on some level, because that's the message that I was being given by the people around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, particularly my parents, that I'd failed. Or my teachers had said that, that you failed. Which is incredibly disempowering to hear that. Personally, whether I felt I failed, that's a really good question. I don't know. I'd have to really sit with that some more. Probably on some level, yes, and probably on some level, no, because again, it really, for me, it all comes back to I'm a very experiential person. You know, I really seek out experiences that I can kind of add to my quiver. You know, it's like, oh, I've experienced this and I've experienced that and I've been in this situation and that situation. And to me, that's where the real learning takes place of, you know, what it means to be a human being, what it means to be alive, what it means to be functioning in the world. You know, that's to me, those types of experiences are more valuable than any, you know, any particular sort of formal study of anything.
Right.
So I think on some level, for me personally, those instances where I abandoned something that I had an interest in at one point are probably not failures, you know, because again, I think they still inform me today.
But failure is kind of an externally imposed label that
it is.
Creates,
it's a label.
Yeah, and but sometimes the label doesn't even need to be explicitly imposed from the outside, right? Because of training, like this would be my experience if I decided I didn't like something or decided I wasn't going to stick with something. It's just internalized as kind of this nebulous feeling of failure, right? Or this mm-hmm. nebulous bad feeling, right? It's not like a big deliberative process of like, well, I didn't do this and this is where things went wrong and here's the plan for the future to not make that. It's just you move on and you feel bad, or I move on and I feel bad. And I brought this up because I'm wondering about your daughter who's never been schooled. Like we understand like that mindset comes from authoritarian parenting and authoritarian schooling. For somebody who has never had that experience, I wonder how a 14-year-old even conceptualizes failure, or if she does.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know. I'd have to ask her.
Right. Yeah. Because like just moving beyond, like if this is what you've known is like, well, I pursue something as long as, you know, there's intrinsic motivation carrying me through that process. And then if it's not there anymore, I don't do it anymore. And that's just, you know, me honoring myself.
Yeah.
No externally imposed expectations.
Right. Again, because if you're operating from a sort of an intrinsic motivation all the time, I think it's probably easier to ignore the messages around you that say, oh, that's a failure. You know, that's a failure. You're no good at this. You're no good at that. Because you're like, well, I feel it inside. You know, I'm sort of, if you're tapped into that intrinsic motivator, then I don't know. This is a really good question. You got me thinking now.
Well, we could do a follow-up at some point. You can think about it for a month or two. And we'll do a follow-up.
Yeah.
I think it relates though to, you know, what you do in this attempt in the film In Class Dismissed to have, you know, an eclectic presentation of problems and solutions, right?
Right.
Like you come at the school problem from a variety of ways and you pursue or explore solutions in a variety of ways as well. And, you know, we're talking about failure. And one of the things I remember hitting home for me in the movie was stress, right? This was another thing that I think when I was a student, I wasn't a good student. I didn't care about school. I didn't feel like I was particularly smart. Stress was very – I mean, maybe I felt it. Maybe there was like discomfort or I wasn't looking forward to things. But I never saw school from the vantage point of being like a high performer with people having these high expectations for me. And, you know, I think this is something that is talked about with students in the film, including the family. School is stressful. I suddenly started to see school from new points of view when I was – I left teaching. I was a classroom teacher till 2006. And then I moved like to the Boston area and I was working with a lot of like honor roll students, Ivy League bound students. And the pressure these kids were putting on themselves was absolutely unbelievable. The second student I worked with was 16 years old. Her best friend had committed suicide.
Yeah, it's you know? Horrifying.
Yeah, like a week, within the week of us starting to work together on getting her SAT scores up, right? So there was no and I remember her confiding in me, this girl, saying she felt so much pressure, you know, of school and college and what's next and all of that. And I think that contributed. This was something that, you know, was told to me. And I knew a lot less than I didn't know what to do with that information. But at all levels of school, like you would say, school works for these kids. But what I realized, and this was the big wake up for me, like I was becoming aware of how school was a failure for kids who were struggling, because I'd come from a boarding school, or kids who had, you know, like social and emotional challenges, kids who had been medicated, kids who had been kicked out of public schools and put in the private boarding school that I worked at, or the private day school that I worked at. Mm-hmm. And then to go to the kids who are quote unquote successful in school and to see that their problems are in some cases even worse.
Right.
That was a wake up for me.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the stress that you witnessed in preparing this film.
Of the family in the film?
Yeah.
Well, what was interesting, you know, I mean, it was clear that there was some level of stress from their school situation. It was clear right from the beginning. But maybe what was most interesting to me was during the process, because, you know, we spent about 2 years with them on and off following their journey. And for me, what was most telling was the fact that Anna, the older girl, it took her quite some time to realize that she suddenly had the freedom to do whatever she wanted.
Right.
And I remember about halfway through filming, we would, I can't remember exactly what we were doing. We were out doing something and we'd been talking and I could sense that she was right on the edge of taking the reins and just doing what she wanted to do, but she hadn't done it yet. She was waiting for instructions, you know, waiting for someone to tell her it's okay now, you can do this, you know, waiting for that bell, which was never going to come now. And I remember I said to her, I said, you know, Anna, you can do anything you want now. What are you waiting for? And I just sort of put it out there and left it at that. And then about 2 weeks later, you know, she suddenly, it's like a little light bulb went on. And she suddenly took the reins and decided, you know, what it was that she really wanted to do and started to really, you know, live her life on her own terms. And it was just so interesting to me to kind of watch that process, because I saw that much, much earlier in the filming, you know, where a part of me was sort of getting a little bit impatient, like, come on already. How long is this going to go on for? You know,
after how long?
Yeah. You know, after they were pulled out of school, you know, 6 months later, it felt like, okay, can we move along now?
And she was She was 14. How old was she?
13 or 14. I can't remember, actually. But yeah, so that was very telling to me, because what that really said was that she had never been asked yet or had the opportunity to ask herself what she really wanted to do with her life. Up until that point, everything had already been decided for her. Right. And so for her to have to make the decision by herself of, oh, I want to learn about this, or I want to follow this path, was just huge for her. It was groundbreaking, you know, and that was so interesting to sort of have to sit back and allow that to unfold and not to intervene in some way, you know, and try to sort of hurry it along for the sake of the filming. It's like, you know, I was like, well, we're just going to sit around and wait until the penny drops, you know, and it took longer than I thought it would take. And that was very interesting to me. And so I guess I didn't really answer your question about the stress, but I think they're kind of related in a sense, in that, you know, perhaps in some way that was stressful for her to have to take on that decision as well, you know, and she had no skills to really do that initially.
Well, it also speaks to the stress of, I think, well, maybe, this is an interesting question, because you get to that age, like, say she's 14, so she's been through 8 years of institutionalized schooling, and suddenly all of the tracks, you know, are removed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just standing there in a field.
Right.
I would think that could be stressful. Right?
Right, right.
But then to think in school, especially with these higher achieving kids, like the train's really got to run on time, to stick with the tracks metaphor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole other kind of stress. But as Scott Noel says in the film, to, I think, like the question or the criticism, well, homeschooling or unschooling doesn't prepare people, right?
Right.
He says, well, it doesn't prepare kids for a conventional life.
Right.
You know, school does a great job of preparing people for very conventional lives that are stressful, that are not self-directed in many ways for many people, that have, you know, an absence of choice in key areas of life, that, you know, happiness is really dependent on choice being there. Yeah, that's interesting that in both cases, or I definitely think I saw it more from the school side, where you know, with the tracks and having stay on the tracks, go faster, stay on schedule. But the other thing, I guess the other part of that, though, is there a kind of comfort in that? Of because if you look at people, you know, getting out in the world and getting a job, not being self-directed in so many ways, not that there's anything wrong with having a job, but so many people lack that self-direction in their adult lives, but there's almost a comfort in being told what to do. What does anybody want in a crisis? A leader, you know?
Right,
that's a very schooled idea, that I don't know how to solve this problem, I'll settle for somebody who's acting like they know how to solve this problem.
Right.
One more question. Two more questions, actually. Do we have time for two more questions? I want to be respectful of your time.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. There is a kind of follow-up film that you're working on. Not a follow-up as far as the same family is concerned.
Right.
You are working on another project as far as unschooling outcomes.
Yes.
Can we talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, as I was traveling all around the country and around the world, actually, screening Class Dismissed and doing Q&As with audiences and things, the same questions just kept coming up over and over again. And that was, well, you know, it's fine to unschool or homeschool when they're little, when they're young. But, you know, what happens when they become adults? Like, can they get a job? Are they going to be able to, if they've been unschooled all their lives, how are they going to get into college and have to sit in a classroom and you know, follow the rules and things like that? And these questions just kept coming up over and over again, and Class Dismissed, you know, doesn't really fully address them. I mean, we touch upon them a little bit in different ways, but, you know, not in a deep way. So I started thinking, well, that would be an interesting thing to really dig into and find out, you know, well, how do they turn out?
Right, right.
You know, and so Self-Taught, my new film, is really about that. You know, much like I did with Class Dismissed, I put out a call through unschooling networks to locate some young adults who had been unschooled. And, you know, the criteria there was that they had to have had almost no schooling or none or very little and basically self-directed, you know, unschooled. And then I was going to spend a bit of time with each of them to find out, well, what are you doing now exactly? You know, do you have a job? Are you at college? How did that work out? You know, and it, your experiences as an unschooler, have they helped or hindered you in doing what you're doing now?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what the film focuses on. So I have six people that are primarily, you know, the focus is on their stories. And then it's interwoven with some other interviews with, and I hate to use this word, quote unquote, experts. You know, Blake Bowles is in the film, Peter Gray is in the film. And I also spend time with Kenneth Danford, who, as you know, you're probably aware of, you know, the North Star Center for Teens. Yeah, so looking at that program a little bit and seeing what they're doing, which is really incredible. I was blown away spending a few days with them and seeing what they're doing in terms of, you know, empowering teens to really take their education in their own hands and follow their passions and so on. So that's kind of how the film is structured. It's a very, very different story and different feel to Class Dismissed because it's not following one particular family. It's six individual stories, but they all have parallels and things that connect them to each other. And I'm really looking forward to sharing it with everyone. I'm in the final stages of the film now. I have an edit together. I'm just trying to fundraise right now to be able to afford a composer to put the final music on and polish it all up and, you know, put the icing on the cake, so to speak, before it's ready. So I'm hoping in the spring of next year it'll be ready for release. And I specifically focused on unschooling because I felt like, you know, when you talk about homeschooling to people, you know, in the sort of general populace, they sort of get that, even though the images in their head may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they sort of understand that word. But if you say unschooling, that really throws them for a loop. So I thought, well, I really want to focus on that.
Yeah, it's almost like homeschooling is too polluted a term as far as most people's prejudices would be concerned.
Right.
And this is something new and fresh, but you also have a method to show people what it actually looks like. That's terrific.
Yeah, because I felt also that, you know, if I talk to someone who sort of did school at home, people would go, well, yeah, they were learning stuff at home. Yeah, no big deal. But then if I show someone that basically never set foot in a school and did whatever he wanted for 15 years,
mm-hmm.
how's he turned out? You know, and that's a much more interesting story, I think. So those are the types of stories that I share in the film. And I'm really looking forward to finishing it up.
Does it have a tagline? I know Class Dismissed was a film about learning outside the classroom. Do you have a short, punchy sentence for this one?
Uh-huh, I do. It's life stories from self-directed learners.
Oh, perfect. I love it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're shooting for, you said, middle of 2019?
Yeah, hopefully, if all goes well. I have a Kickstarter campaign running right now, and I'm you know, furiously working away to get the film finished up and hopefully get it out to spring of next year.
And how are you going to work screenings? Is there any plan for that? I know the last film you screened around the country to a lot of small, very focused audiences, right?
Yeah, that was an enormous undertaking, and I'm not quite sure I want to go through that again.
Yeah.
It was a huge, huge deal. It was just basically me and my co-producer and my family. You know, it was a big challenge to get that to happen. And we did incredibly well with that. But so I don't know. I might rethink that a little bit this time around. I'm not quite sure yet what that plan is. I'm still sort of putting the pieces into place.
Awesome.
But it'll be available. Don't worry. It'll be, easily accessible. So,
well, I'll make sure that I put the link. You said you're doing a Kickstarter?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I'll make sure that link is in the...
17 days to go.
Awesome. Then I'll make sure I'll get the show out as soon as I can, and I'll make sure that link is in the show notes. One final question, because this is something that was in the film Class Dismissed. There was like a little segment about it, and then I know Lori talked about it too, the history of public school.
Yeah.
I'm always interested when people have a story like this to tell, or they demonstrate that they've done a bunch of research on the problems and the solutions. This is a really big piece of the puzzle. And this is one of the things that is missing from, I think, the school versus learning debate, is that people don't understand the history and the intention of the public school system in the United States as it was delivered here from Central Europe in the middle of the 19th century. I would like to hear just a short version of your telling of this story.
A short version.
Like, you're in an elevator in a fairly tall building with somebody who's very incredulous about all of this.
So you're talking about how, why schooling, formalized schooling was set up in the first place.
Yeah. Or however you tell that story, like whatever. I mean, obviously, it goes from the early 1800s and, you could be telling school history into the 1980s or 1990s, depending on where you want to stop. But what are the important points to you?
Well, to me, the important point to that is, it was largely set up to train people to work in factories as a result of the Industrial Revolution. As we started manufacturing more, they needed workers to work in factories that would respond to bells and signals, and schooling was a perfect way to basically train people in that way so that they could have menial jobs in factories. And actually, Laurie does a really good job of explaining that in that section of the film. I mean, that was the first part of it. I think the other part of it was population control, just not allowing people to get too outside of the box with their freedom and their thinking, mm-hmm. control the population, and you can manipulate them, make them into consumers, sell them a bill of goods that they don't agree with, and they'll just go for it because they're trained to do so. All of that is part of the industrialized school system as well. So I think it's twofold. It's, training people for factory work and menial tasks and to not complain about that, and also just to be able to control them and manipulate them at will.
Right. So radical school reform, meaning to strike at the roots, did not come along until the 1960s. So every school reform effort accepted, including John Dewey, mm-hmm. who had quite a vision for school at the turn of the 20th century, nobody addressed that foundation. And the radical school reformers, they're interesting to read, but we know how much of an impact they had at this point on the system. And that was the last real attempt. So that foundation is still in place. And did you know that Horace Mann, who delivered this to Massachusetts, never saw the Prussian schools in session?
Really? Is that true? Huh?
He went over there and he interviewed administrators and teachers. He was there during a school break. He never even saw how...
Yeah, and then he comes back and suggests this to Congress, and they pass it, and here we are today, right?
Yeah, he never even saw a child's face in a school in Prussia.
Wow. And so, I wonder how many high schools or any schools around the country are named after him, too. There's loads of Horace Mann schools everywhere.
When I was discovering all of this, I remember it was within the same year that I read Against School in a school library while I was waiting for a group of students that I was going to tutor that day, I stumbled across, I think it's in Dover, Massachusetts, a statue of Horace Mann In the midst of this discovery of Gatto, there's a statue like in the central location. Like the company that I worked for, that I was tutoring for, was based in this town, and there was the statue of Horace Mann there. And we did a historian and I, Thaddeus Russell. We were doing some events last year, and we did one in Salem. And one of the locations we were trying to get was in Salem, Massachusetts. And this was, a place where these people operated. There was a Horace Mann laboratory school, and I couldn't find – it was part of Salem State University or something. But they had all these old school buildings from the 19th century, and I was trying to find the building that was this laboratory school, but we could not use it. So there are – the answer to your question is yes. In Massachusetts, certainly – there are things named after Horace Mann. Also, Antioch College in Ohio has a very bizarre statue of Horace Mann out in the woods that I discovered with a few listeners last summer. So,
how strange.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's still considered the father of American public education.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jeremy, thank you so much for all of your time and for your wisdom on this subject. And if people want to learn more about Class Dismissed and the upcoming project, is there a central location they should visit?
Class Dismissed Movie is the website for that film, and selftaughtmovie.com is the website for the new film.
Well, as the release gets closer, let's follow up. Let's do another show. We can remind the people in my audience. They'd certainly be very interested in seeing this film and sharing this film. And spreading the word about this film.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time today, and appreciate being on the show. And I thank you for what you're doing too. I think it's really terrific that there's another voice out there helping to change people's minds and give them insight into all these other options that we have available to us. So.
Indeed, it's my pleasure. I'm glad I can do it, and I'm glad there's good company.
Great. Thanks so much, Brett.